Hello there, everybody. My name is Bea Bonner, and you're listening to Community Voices right here on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS. And today, I am talking to Dr. Wendy Wills-Elamine. She is the Associate Dean for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion at SIU School of Medicine, but she's also on faculty in the Department of Family and Community Medicine and provides care at the Center for Family Medicine in Springfield. Ooh, Dr. Wendy, that's a lot, but how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, well, we're going to jump right in. Now, you're not from Springfield, but tell us where you're from and a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I'm from Houston, Texas. I have been in Springfield for about 14 years, and it has become my home. Previously, I was in Charlottesville, Virginia at University of Virginia.
I got to read about you and saw you come from teachers and doctors and healers. So how did that influence your aspirations as you grew up?
Sure. Well, I was raised by a teacher. So what that means is that I was always dissecting things and learning things. And I really feel like the exposure that she gave me with field trips and taking us places and teaching us that idea of always being curious really played a big role. My father is a physician. And at the time when I was coming up, I didn't want to have anything to do with medicine. Because he was just working hard all the time. And I knew that I wanted to have children at the same time. So that did not seem as tangible to me. But I have learned that whatever you fight is what you end up becoming. So going into medicine allowed me to really focus on teaching, but then also the social sciences, psychology. When I went to college at Hampton University, I actually thought I wanted to be a psychologist. Mm. And somebody said, well, don't you want to be able to prescribe medicine? So why don't you do biology? You know, sometimes it's that one little conversation that changes things. So I end up going into medicine, and I'm really happy that I have, because I'm able to practice all the things that I have been interested in, from legal aspects to teaching and social science.
So let me ask you this, family medicine, what led you to family medicine?
Well, my father is internal medicine, and so that focuses primarily on adults, and I always was really interested in mission work, and I knew that family medicine would give me the breadth that I needed to be able to take care of children, to deliver babies, and to also take care of the elderly. So I wanted to be able to join him in private practice, but be able to add something that was not there, and it has been a great field for me. It's taken me many places, from Liberia, Africa, doing mission work. I've worked in the prison before. I've always worked in places like a federally qualified health center because I believe that family medicine is also a safety net, and it's a privilege to be able to provide for individuals at their most vulnerable states.
Well, let's talk about some of your travels and your mission work. What was that like, providing care for individuals that may not get it on a regular basis?
I'm a spiritual person, so I believe that when you've been given different gifts and talents that you need to use them to your best of ability. But it was very humbling, because a lot of things that you see in some third world countries, you may not see here in the United States. You've only been taught it when you're in medical school.
Right.
So things like TB, or we pretty much eradicated a lot of those different things. But in third world countries, you see a lot more of that. So it's very humbling. It keeps you on your toes.
Well, let's talk about corrections. Now, a lot of people hear that and they're like, Dr. Wendy, you are working in corrections. What was that like?
Well, it was interesting. When I had my first daughter, I had just moved to University of Virginia. And the woman that did my postpartum check, she said, oh, you know, have you ever thought about working in the prison? And I was like,
the prison?
Like, where I had just never been really exposed to it, but I wanted to find a place where I could work part-time and stay with my daughter at the same time. And really, it was the most powerful work that I have ever done, being able to support people in their most vulnerable times. And it was a woman's facility, so it's really hard to support people who have been locked away from their children. And many people are not aware of what's going on. And the majority of those individuals are going to be released. So it's a unique opportunity to provide them the best care so that they can come back and be strong parts of our society.
Yeah. How did you approach care inside the facility?
I always thought it was really important for my patients to never feel judged, to know that I was just their physician. And trust is really important when you're taking care of patients. There's a great book called The Thin Book of Trust, and it says if you have these four qualities around trust, that you're sincere, that you care, you're reliable, and you're competent. And I think many of them had not had that opportunity to have that deeper level of trust. And as a physician, I always tell my patients, I can't heal your secrets. And many times there's a lot of stigma involved with some of the diseases that we can make a change in. And so it was an opportunity to really get connected with them and to support them in ways that once they were released, that they had a strong health foundation to be able to build upon. And that's one of the reasons why I love SIU School of Medicine is that we have an Office of Correctional Medicine that is run by Dawn DeFrades, and she's done an exceptional job with making sure that our medical students and our colleagues are aware of the impact that they can make.
Yeah, I think you are right. Some of those people have never had the healthcare before. They've never had somebody to actually sit down and listen to their stories. And so the care you can provide really helps them on the outside. So
And many of them had done one wrong thing. And I don't think that we have enough exposure to what people are really going through. And some of them are survival crimes.
Yeah. A lot of people are in survival mode in the current world we live in. And you got to experience that a lot more when you were working very heavily during the HIV/AIDS crisis. And so I bet that showed you how to show care towards all patients and to give equity, which a lot of people don't understand. Can you talk to us a little bit more about equity and patient care with things I think are a little taboo? Well, maybe not anymore, but back then I know it was a lot more taboo, the HIV/AIDS crisis.
Right. And when I think about equity, equity is giving people what they need. It's not equality where we're going to give all patients the exact same things. And I remember when I did work in the prison, I was really surprised how long I saw people with HIV living. You know, this was, you know, almost 15, 20 years ago. And I said, this is really sad that you have individuals who are incarcerated, who are getting the medicines that they need. They're getting the support that they need. So they're living longer. How can we reproduce this out side of the prison? And I think that stigma plays a huge role with people wanting to come in and get the support and to be screened. So it was a unique opportunity for me to be able to do that.
Yeah. And so you came to Springfield. What led you here?
Well, it was really recruiting, being recruited from University of Virginia. I was coming here in family medicine. And it was interesting because we came here during the, I think it was the 100th anniversary of the 1908 race riots. And I was like, what is going on here? And now that I have gotten more into equity, diversity, inclusion, I have had the opportunity to see the impact of what has happened historically in our community and how that still plays a profound role with us having such a high segregation index, with us seeing some of the disparities that we see. I think recently I've started working with Dr. Sripada Tripathi, who's done a lot of health equity data work. And what he has found is that, especially in our communities, there are zip codes that have not been supported in the ways that they needed to be supported. And so our zip codes should never determine what our health is. And we're seeing that.
Wow. So how do we go about changing that?
Well, I think in the last 15 years, what we have realized is that what happens in the clinic is only 20% of a person's care. Their behavioral, their health behaviors is about 30%, but 40% of what happens to a person's health are the social determinants of health, how well they're educated, how well they understand financial literacy, do they have housing? And I think that what we have been trying to do is to illuminate that more in our community health needs assessment. We've been doing more community forums to make sure that every single person has a responsibility to improve the health of our community. Do you remember the Maslow hierarchy? That if you don't have your physiological needs met, then you can't have your safety needs met. You can't become self-actualized. And to me, having good health is really about being self-actualized. And every person deserves that. And what we have seen over the last 100 years and how communities have not been able to make the same level of progress as other communities, we have to invest in those communities. And our children deserve that.
Well, how do you measure the impact of EDI initiatives? Because it's one thing to put things in practice, it's one thing to apply, but how do you actually measure the impact?
I think that we have electronic health records, and it's an opportunity for us to be very data-driven, where we can break down data based upon race, gender, sexual orientation, and I think that that's important for us to do when we're looking at our outcomes. Recently, our health data equity strategist has started to look at zip codes, you know, life expectancy, looking at access to care. Where are our deserts? You know, I think that we have to really drill down. And some of that drilling down has showed us that people in certain zip codes are living 10, 15 years less than other zip codes.
Wow.
So for us to be able to go back in and say, what resources do we need to bring into that community? How can we help people access health in a different way? Are there food deserts in that area? I think that that's one of the ways that we can measure equity.
Well, and I think data helps a lot, but for some people, it's that personal story, that narrative, that storytelling that really gets at the heart of people. So what role does that play in your advocacy work and in your teaching and in your job?
Yeah, I think that storytelling really puts that face and experience behind the data. I was thinking the other day how I really got involved in equity work. I remember being an intern and I had a woman that I was seeing that I, you know, as an intern, you're the smallest on the team. And someone came out and they said, you know, like, well, we need to call the psych department to get her transferred. And I was like, why? And is this the same patient that I just saw? And it was a African-American woman. She was about 78 years old. She's like, well, they're talking about her worried about getting out because people are digging in her backyard. And I was like, they probably are worried. She probably is worried about people digging in her backyard, because I knew people didn't always use banks.
Yes.
They were burying their money in the backyard. Mm-hmm. So just having that understanding and me being able to speak up and saying, like, actually, this person, you know, nothing's wrong with her. She is worried. She has her life savings in the backyard.
Your grandma used to put it under the mattress.
Right, right. So having those stories in that context helps people to see how it can be one little pivot that changes things. I had another patient actually during my intern year as well who kept coming in apparently, and people kept giving him a shot. And he said he was having problems down there. And I was like, well, let me give you a gown and change clothes. And he's like, well, nobody ever, you know, makes me change clothes and gives me a gown. I'm like, well, that's a problem. We need to examine you. And it turned out that he was being treated for syphilis and he had priapism and he had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a type of cancer which was causing the problem. So once you hear those types of stories and you have those experiences, it makes you move through medicine very differently. And it makes you always want to excavate the story behind the person. And then you start to understand why people haven't had that trust always. But building that trust, I do believe, is a skill.
Well, how do you teach students this?
Well, one, I actually tell them some of these stories, but we also bring in people from the community to share their stories. So we asked people from the community to come in and say, can you tell us about what went really well for you in medicine that made you feel motivated and inspired? Tell us about that story. What didn't go well for you? And telling those stories gives people the opportunity to not make the same mistakes. And it really does inspire the next generation of physicians to be more culturally responsive, to be more sensitive. And I think that that does help.
Well, Dr. Wendy, I don't see how you do it all. This is a lot of work. How do you stay, I guess, motivated and emotionally grounded? Because you're dealing with very sensitive topics. You're dealing with real people. So how do you stay grounded?
Well, it can be exhausting at times, but I think that when you are spiritually based and you recognize that you are changing lives and you have an opportunity to change communities, and that this work, equity, diversity, inclusion work, is life-saving, because I've taken the Hippocratic Oath, which means to do no harm. And sometimes when a person's story is not complete, you can do harm. And there's an opportunity for us to break some of the generational cycles that have, you know, carried legacies for many years. There's an opportunity for us to have the next generation that feels inspired to step in and feels like they're stepping into an environment that they can truly trust.
Now, what's next for you? You've done so much. What is the dream of Dr. Wendy's to do next?
I would love to write more.
Yes.
And potentially, you know, write a book or to start to work on my skills to kind of tell more of these stories.
Yeah. I think storytelling is so powerful. And frankly, I think a lot of people sleep on the power of storytelling and what it can do. And just hearing the stories you told today, I truly believe it'll change somebody and maybe encourage them to maybe get healthy, go to the doctor, but it may also change some doctors' ideas about and minds about their patients. So right. I think what you're doing is so important. And I hope one day you do write that book so I can read it.
Well, I just joined the Department of Medical Humanities and I love that. I really see them as being the keepers of stories. Mm-hmm. And there's so many stories that are forgotten. But when people have that opportunity to tell their story and feel that their story is truly valued, it's another way for them to be seen, heard, and respected, and for the pain not to be recycled.
That's the word right there. Well, I think we'll wrap up right there. Dr. Wendy, anything else you want to add or a note you want to leave us on today?
Well, one of the things that I would love to see, we have the McNeese Physician Preparatory Pathway Program, and it has been in existence for the last 14 years. And I'm really excited about us expanding. We now have a Saturday Academy. We have more students that are coming in ninth grade and they stay with us till 12th grade.
And how can people find that program?
Well, we're doing interviews right now. So next year will be time for the ninth graders to get involved. And, you know, with the loss of a lot of our grants and things, we're hoping that we can raise some funds to be able to support this because it really has been a positive impact for the students to also learn about how to be healthier. And then many of them are wanting to go into healthcare fields and we need more of that. There's a healthcare shortage and we have to come up with more solutions.
I agree. We'll keep your eye out for that. And again, we're talking about next year's cycle and congratulations and good luck to everybody interviewing now. Now, before we go, I just want to thank you again, Dr. Wendy, for being here, answering my questions and just having some good storytelling time today. So thank you again for joining me today on Community Voices.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
If you missed part of today's show, you can listen again tonight at 10 p.m.